Despite my previous adventures as an independent performer of posturing and contortions, and my ambition to perform as a clown, I was once again doing menial backstage tasks with Hengler's Circus, and ribbed endlessly for not being born directly into the circus, but an outsider, or josser. We toured around the country in our circular tent, or sometimes in a wooden structure of similar design, complete with tiered seating, a gallery over the orchestra and stables, a smoking promenade, and separate entrances to keep the classes apart. Some of these venues could accommodate as many as 7,000 people a night. One day, I heard Uncle Charles and Edward Hengler discussing business out in the promenade, so I slipped into the dressing room and put on a clown costume. Then I took two chairs into the middle of the ring where I knew they were bound to see me. I came on and did all my tricks, just as if I was before the paying public. Much to my delight, they laughed and applauded loudly. I made my bow, and then Edward came down and patted me on the back.
So, you think you'd like to be a performer, eh? Well, I'll give you a chance. I've put James Ryan in for juggling, so you can do some tricks between his and give him a rest.
When, sir?
Why? Tonight, sir.
That evening was my first outing as a clown,
and the crowd liked me well. But I had tough competition, and not always in human form. At a little circus in North Shields, the governor discovered Jimmy.
He was a large, white-faced monkey with a low forehead, small, sunken, restless eyes, a receding chin and powerful jaws. He was very strong, treacherous, and spiteful. Despite all this, he was a star rider and could perform a range of other tricks, such as catching candlesticks with lighted candles in them. The governor bought the creature, and he became one of our principal attractions,
promoting more laughter than either the clowns or comic acts.
At first, he was allowed to ride on a pony in the parade about town and join any part of the procession, but this did not last long, because Jimmy would catch at people as he passed, pulling one or two children down under the pony's hooves and severely biting a couple of others. It cost the governor a good sum of money just to square the parents. When travelling, we usually halted a mile or so from the town in which we were to perform in order to dress and wash, ready for the grand parade.
If a pub was nearby, so much the better.
Otherwise, hedgerows were our only protection. I remember once we stopped outside the town of Espatria in Cumbria to prepare for the parade. The ladies were in the vans dressing while the men got changed behind some hedges. The grooms were busy cleaning and decorating the horses, and the musicians lay round about practicing and sucking on their pipes. I was ready before the others, so started to dress Jimmy for the parade. But as there was a rip in his breeks, I took him to the wardrobe van for repair, leaving the rascal monkey to the care of Adrian the clown. When I returned, the monkey pulled a face at Adrian, who laughed and let go of the chain. Well, the monkey was off. I dashed after him, but he escaped into a coppice on the road to Espatria, and he was lost. The parade was delayed until the very last moment. Then off they all went, and I was left with the injunction not to return unless accompanied by Jimmy. Oh, I was in a misery of isolation. But I managed to beg the assistance of a young farmer, who soon started to lose interest until suddenly I noticed one of the musicians' smoking pipes.
"Look, he can't be far off," I told the farmer. "Here's the pipe he was smoking when he ran away."
"What? Do you mean he smokes?"
he asked incredulously.
"Yes, but only half an ounce a day. That's his allowance."
"Hmm. Will he do any harm to the game birds?"
"No," said I, afraid that he might go for his gun and shoot Jimmy. "He never touches game, unless it's well hung." Well, our search proved useless, and we were about to give up, when an immense cartload of wood passed by, on top of which was Jimmy.
holding the end of his chain as delicately and graciously as girls hold up their petticoats. I think Jimmy was as pleased to see me as I was him, and I carried him in triumph to the circus tent, where the performance was already in progress, and all was well. In those days, foreign animals were a much greater rarity than they are now, and when we reached Kirby Stephen, the monkey was the talk of the village after the town parade. After the morning's performance was over, I was having tea when a groom rushed in to say that Jimmy had got loose and injured a boy. The village was in alarm, and many had shut themselves in or were ready to fight.
"There he is, on top of that house," shouted a villager.
I clambered up onto the roof after the demon, who immediately scampered down and leapt into the arms of the governor. I started back down and, in so doing, had to make my way round a huge open chimney, down which I could see a cauldron on the ember, and from where I could hear a woman holding forth. She was declaiming against circus people and all other vagabonds. In those days, anyone that had travelled 50 miles from the family porridge pot was thought of as a ne'er-do-well, and all strangers were subject to much suspicion. I heard all sorts of uncomplimentary allusions from this woman. Then I noticed that one of the big stones on top of the chimney was loose. So loose, in fact, that when I touched it, it lost its balance. Down the chimney it went, smashing the pot on the hearth fire and sending the inmates of the house outside screaming and swearing that the damn monkey was coming for them down the chimney. But with time, I began to feel that my posturing act was not sufficient. So I got permission to practice a bar act. Now, this normally requires a sound knowledge of both riding and acrobatics, for it involves a horse with no harness or saddle galloping around the ring at full speed. The bareback rider then has to vault from the horse, leap some object such as a bar or gate, and jump back into position again, all whilst the horse continues its gallop. I was able to get a horse for practice, but only at an early hour, before it was in use elsewhere. So as soon as it was light, I had the horse in the ring. There was no ringmaster with me, which meant that I could not keep the horse at a regular pace, and the consequence was a bungled leap, and I fell down under his feet. The sharp part of his shoe made a hole in my left leg, and for a long time I had a most dangerous sore, and that accident did away with my running vault. Only a little later, I was riding in an entree when my horse slipped and fell, smashing my instep and knee. As a result, the only riding role I would occasionally manage was to sing The Rat Catcher's Daughter in the Snuggery of the Fleece whilst riding on a milk-white donkey, which during the summer did duty as a zebra when painted with stripes. Our very appearance would result in a whole minute of laughter from the crowd. A clown and a donkey, the low extremes of artiste and horse. I enjoyed performing such comic songs in character and got more and more engagements with them as the new music halls began to set up. Together with posturing, I used my physical oddity and comic songs to form the basis of my clowning. My particularities offset the glamour and skill of the other circus artists, but I never gave way to mere vulgarity for the sake of a laugh. A funny man does not have to be part of a team. All you need is your own material, skill, and access to an audience. The clown gives the principals a rest, distracts the crowd's attention if necessary, and ensures that the show runs smoothly. For example, the famous clown Wallet became the star turn for us at Hengler's. I remember he gave a mock lecture on mesmerism and phrenology and called on the audience for help. In Derby, a cocky sort of fellow climbed into the ring, took off his hat and placed it on the phrenological china head. Wallet picked up the hat, looked at it, then looked at the owner and said,
"'Tis not first block your hat's fitted."
His byplay got great laughs, and the cocksure volunteers sunk into silence until, with a more modest demeanour, he left the ring. There are many tricks and routines played to manage the audience. Outrageous costumes, monologues, slapstick, backchat, and topical allusions all have their place. In order to be topical and novel for each audience, I would always take note of any matters of local consequence to add into a wheeze or routine. This was especially important if we were pitched in one location for more than a day or two. Mind you, more than once I remember the governor saying,
"I'll fine you for your damnable politics, Mr. Froud."
Yet to comment on the world has always been part of a clown's role, along with pricking pomposity and supporting the underdog. There is a famous tale of a clown called Tom, who, like me, sported a moustache. He was called as a witness for the defence in a court case and duly gave his evidence in a firm and unshakable manner. To try and throw him off balance, the prosecuting barrister asked with a sneer,
"Are you a clown, sir?"
Tom sighed. "I am." There was a laugh from the bench and the public, but the barrister rejoined,
"Are you sure that you are indeed a clown? For clowns do not usually wear moustaches. Pray, what is your reason for wearing one?"
Tom replied, "Quick as you please, the same reason you have for wearing a wig, to distinguish me from other fools." Ha! Above all, circus appeals to the senses. The music of the band, the scent of the sawdust and horses, the glow of the paraffin lights and the brilliance of the spangled costumes. It is the domain of the extraordinary, a festival of spectacle and skill where ordinary humans become sublime gods on horseback or ridiculous fools on the sawdust. But in the circus family, people and places are what are important. These are the permanent markers in an itinerant life. The detail of routes and locations, the travail in reaching a destination, the rigours, the miles covered, the hardships endured. This is what makes the ownership of a wandering life. I owned that wayfaring life for 14 hard years, but left it all behind when I married a clergyman's daughter. As a gentleman, I could build something more solid and more permanent than the passing glory and lasting hardship of the circus ring.